Christian greetings to each of you this morning. It's a blessing to see you all gathered here for the purpose of worship. Trust that's in our hearts as we approach our Lord this evening, the God, the Creator. We heard about Him in the devotional. He is a great God, and we have come here to worship Him, and let's do that. Appreciated the thoughts, Brother Chad. Appreciated your thoughts there on giving. It was very timely. Appreciate the presence of each one. Appreciate the visitors that are here with us this morning. I'd like to give, for the order of the message, I'd like to spend a little bit of time on the conference report, and then we'll have the sermon. And then after the sermon, Brother Clarence, would you lead us in a kneeling prayer? Thank you. So we gathered together on Wednesday for minister's meeting, and Brother Chad gave us the report on the monetary funds and some of the losses there, the needs there. I won't spend much time on that. One of the things that we do is we talk about issues, and you're aware, very aware of this. I'm not going to go into, obviously, everything we talked about. One of the things that I'll give you an update on is the home builders. Home builders, this is what I have written down here. I don't know if it was stated like this, but home builders will be allowed to die out. Y'all know what that means? In other words, yeah, it looks like there will not be another home builders meeting. A little bit of history on it was given. It was very interesting. Started way, way, way back, probably back in Lancaster Conference. But that probably will not be continuing. There was a point on how to address concerns and direction of travel, and some things were brought by the bishops as in relation to concerns, and I'm just going to relate them to you. It's one thing for bishops to lead out and give direction about things that they see, and it's another thing for ministers and pastors and deacons to translate that to the congregation. And I'm not going to make a big deal about this other than to inform you some of the things we talked about, and I want to give my support to that. A concern was mentioned about bachelor parties and so on. I guess bachelorette parties could be a part of that too. Some of the things that go along with that, there's been some things that were done in those kind of parties that would definitely cross lines. So we want to encourage activities that build kingdom, not work against it. Some of our people have participated in weddings that compromised our standards, and encourage you to be careful with that. Maternity patterns are showing up that are not approved. Another little item that it's hard for me to get my mind around, but the purchasing of wedding rings, not to wear, but to, I guess, put them on your dresser, and I'm not sure what, but some encouragement that not be done. So that was Wednesday, and maybe there's some more things that should be or could be added there. You can think of anything. One of the things that came out of our district meeting, which was before the full conference ministers meeting, was that you all can look forward to. Okay, so one of the things, so Wednesday, I'll circle around back. Wednesday evening was mission meeting, and my wife and I were there, but I don't think I saw anybody else there. So, but I will say that, Lord willing, in spring conference, it will be held here. So I don't think there's too many excuses why you should not be here for mission meeting and for conference. And that was Thursday, which is open for all to attend. So I'm looking forward to seeing some of you there for that, possibly in a spring conference. So that was That was when the bishop, Brother Anthony, preaches a conference message, and he preached the title. His title was "A Vision Today That Will Bless the Church Tomorrow." And good message. I encourage you to look up these messages online and listen to them. It's talking about vision, talking about looking forward. We have a cause worth defending. Second message of the morning was God and His holiness. And the theme was attributes of God in our ministry. And the morning message was Virgil Heise preached on His holiness. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord. Much, very good message. Am I trying to look for things that will prevent me from being ready to meet God? And he held up his phone, he held up his wallet, and he held up, what was the third thing?
Medicine bottle,
that's what it was. I suddenly couldn't think of what the third one was. Held up his wallet, he held up his phone, and held up the medicine bottle, or things that can distract us and keeping us from being holy and keeping us from being ready to meet the Lord. And we had a noon intermission, we had lunch together, and then some business minutes for the last meeting and reports, and then two more messages on the attributes of God, one by yours truly, on the goodness and mercy of God, and also Brother Dale Whitmer on his immutability and faithfulness. Don't think I'm going to give any more comments on that. You can talk to one of us later if you would like to know more or have some questions. I'd like to go into the sermon. You can turn in your Bibles to Exodus. Actually, I'm not quite ready to turn there, but you can go there a while. The title of the message is Honoring the Lord's Day. And at this subject, some of my family will smile, but this comes out of a discussion around a table, and it comes here Sunday morning. So I don't want to take a lot of time here, but I believe that we look at society today, and I don't have to tell you that there's a deterioration in society. Society is not, as a whole, moving toward God, toward holiness, toward truth, but it's moving away from that. And I think the practices of on the Lord's Day follow with that. Some of us remember when shopping centers, actually it was fairly recently that some shopping centers in the local area started to open on Sunday. They were not open on Sunday for many, many, many years before that. Why? It's because of some things that were held to in the past that are not held to anymore. And I believe that has an influence on us. So I have 5 points in a message. Answering this question, what is the Lord's Day? The title is Honoring the Lord's Day. The question is, what is the Lord's Day? And then 5 answers to that. Revelation 1, verse 10, John was on the Isle of Patmos. In verse 10, he says, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's Day and heard behind me a great voice as of a trumpet. Now, was that a Sunday, as we understand it today? I tend to think it was. In a certain sense, the Lord's Day can be any day of the week. I understand that. We understand it today when we say the Lord's Day, and that was mentioned this morning already. The Lord's Day, we understand what that means. And I tend to think that it was on the Lord's Day. The Lord's Day, and this goes right into the first point, the Lord's Day. What is the Lord's Day? Number one, it is the first day of the week. And it is the day that Jesus rose from the dead. It was on the first day of the week. And that is very clear. We don't need to turn to passages. You can remember those. They come to your mind. Upon the first day of the week, Jesus rose from the dead. Acts 20, verse 7 says, upon the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul preached unto them, ready to depart on the morrow, and continued his speech until midnight. And in 1 Corinthians 16:2, upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store as God has prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. It seems like, based on these verses, that the Lord's Day is the first day of the week. We'll have a little bit more in some of this as we go along. Number two, I want to spend more time on this point. It is a day of rest, a day of rest. And you can, if your Bibles are open at Exodus 20, you can look at verse 8. These are the Ten Commandments, Exodus 20, verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thy cattle, nor thy stranger that is in within thy gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. A day of rest. Do no work. In fact, no one that is associated with you, not even your animals, are to do work. I thought that was interesting. Why? Because God said so. Genesis 2:2-3, and on the seventh day God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which God created and made. And I thought, if God rested, if God needed to rest, if God thought it was proper to rest, and God wanted to sanctify that day and rest, how much more should I? Now, this thing of buying on the Sabbath is something that I studied into a little bit. It doesn't say anything here in Exodus 20 about not buying on Sabbath. But in Nehemiah 10, verse 31 said this, and if the people of the land bring ware or any victuals on the Sabbath day to sell, that we would not buy it of them on the Sabbath or on the holy day, and that we would leave the seventh year and the exaction of every debt. And we could also, if you're taking notes, you can also write down Nehemiah 13, 15 to 17, which also brings in similar thoughts there. But buying on the Sabbath is asking someone to work for you. And Nehemiah is saying here that we would not buy. If people bring things on the Sabbath day to sell, we would not buy them. Implying the work aspect, asking someone to work for you. As I studied this day of rest, my mind went back to history, and there was several times in history, I think I might have mentioned this before, several times in history when men who were anti-Christian, anti-God, anti-Bible, tried to do away with the seven-day week. And during the French Revolution, 1793 to 1805, the French government that rose up was, or those that were involved in the revolution, were anti-Catholic. And so they tried to do away with any vestige of Catholicism, any vestige of the Bible, and tried to come up with a 10-day work week. And it didn't work. There's something that God put in man that every 7 days there's some kind of a cycle, I believe, a biological cycle, that, and I can't explain it more than that, but a 7-day week is what God designed man to work with. And in the Soviet Union, 1929 to 1931, they had a five-day week. And in 1931 to 1940, they tried a six-day week. And neither of those worked. People didn't like it. Animals didn't like it. And machines didn't like it. It's very interesting to observe that, to study that. Now, question, when did the Sabbath switch from the seventh day to the first day? I know this is maybe somewhat controversial, and according to some people, some Christians, some of those who call themselves Christians, and I believe try to live the Christian life the best that they know how, do observe the seventh day worship like the Jews of the Old Testament did. There is no "thus saith the Lord" that you change the worship from the seventh day to the first day. I would say it happened sometime in the book of Acts between chapters 1 and 20. The we'll look at Acts 20. But it's clear that in the Old Testament that God was very precise about what happens on the Sabbath day and that you keep it holy. And it's on the seventh day of the week. In fact, it starts the evening. It starts the evening and morning started at, the day started the evening before. And some of those things have changed throughout the centuries. But we understood. We read the verses from Exodus 20. We read from Genesis 2. It's very clear that this was that a week, a seven-day week, was instituted by God Himself at creation. And through all dispensations, this week has been in effect. In fact, if your Bibles are still open to Exodus 20, you can look at verse 8. We read that already. But it says, remember the Sabbath day. Now, up to this point, there was no teaching on a week. God did not say, okay, so there's other than in creation there. But it does not... This is the first time that it's written like this, to remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. But the way it's written implies that this was not a new commandment, but a continuation of a previous expectation. Moses said, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Just a reminder to them, this is what you were doing. Continue to do that. Keep it holy. It is God's, it is the Lord's day. It is the day of rest that He instituted there at creation. Now turn to talking about this rest, and we want to look at how Jesus responded to this. Of course, you can turn to Mark chapter 2. Jesus, we move through the Old Testament, we move into the New Testament, and somewhere between the Testaments there, the Pharisees became a group of prominence. They held a lot of sway, and they came up with many rules about Sabbath, and some of those are almost, to our modern ears, almost completely ridiculous. And I'm not going to go into that, much of that at all. You can study that if you want. But Jesus had that understanding of how the Pharisees worked and taught about it several times in the Gospels. Mark chapter 2, verse 23, and it came to pass that he went through the cornfields on the Sabbath day. And his disciples began as they went to pluck the ears of corn. And the Pharisees said unto them, behold, why do they on the Sabbath day that which is not lawful? That which was not lawful. Well, we know what the law said. In fact, a man could be put to death. Numbers 15 talks about a man that was stoned because he was picking up sticks on a Sabbath. It was very, very, you had to be very, very careful what you did on the Sabbath day according to the law of God. God meant what he said about the Sabbath being a day of rest. He meant that. And it was instituted throughout the Old Testament, and the Pharisees built on that. And so as Jesus and his disciples walked through this wheat field, probably it was, and they were hungry, and they grabbed some wheat heads and rubbed them together and shelled them out and ate them. And the Pharisees saw it, and they said, Why do you do that? Why do you break the law? Jesus said unto them, Have ye never heard or read what David did when he had need and was an hungered, he and they that were with him, how he went into the house of God in the days of Abiathar the high priest, and did eat the showbread, which is not lawful to eat but for the priests, and gave also to them that were with him. And he said unto them, The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. Interesting verses there. What we see here is a transition from the letter of the law to the spirit of the law and to the restoration of a principle. And it's interesting that Jesus even gave an example in the Old Testament of someone who broke the law of Sabbath but was blessed for it or was not condemned for it. David was not condemned for eating maybe it wasn't the law of Sabbath, but it was a law of being of the bread, the showbread being only for the priests. But Jesus gave that as an example where the principle of scriptures, God is a holy God, that goes throughout scriptures, but the applications of it in the different times have changed somewhat. And Jesus was reflecting that here. Jesus was saying, now, don't just obey the letter of the law. The letter of the law isn't always the focus as much as the principle behind it. You can keep the letter of the law to the greatest degree like the Philistines did and lose the whole principle of what the law was trying to say. Also Matthew 12, verses 10 through 12. And behold, there was a man which had his hand withered, and they asked him, saying, Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath days, that they might accuse him? And he said unto them, What man shall there be among you that shall have one sheep? And if it fall into a pit on the Sabbath day, will ye not lay hold on it and lift it out? How much then is a man better than a sheep? Wherefore it is lawful to do well on the Sabbath days. We see how Jesus responded to these Sabbath day laws. Not only he was not focusing on exactly what you should or should not do, he was focusing on mercy, benevolence, and blessing. These trump the law of the law, exactly, which is exactly what you should do and what you shouldn't do. But what is the right thing to do? How can you help someone? How can you be there to assist someone that has a flat tire, putting it in today's language? However, we must remember that fundamental truth does not change. God does not change. God is a holy God. That does not change. Fundamental truth about a day of rest, I believe, does not change. We keep it, although what has changed is we keep it out of love and not because of fear. I don't think any of us going home this afternoon and maybe forgetting ourselves and doing a little bit of work or a fear of a lightning bolt from heaven, from God striking us dead. But we have a respect for the holy day because we fear God and we love him. See, the principle didn't change, but Jesus was saying that the letter of the law isn't trump. What's trump is mercy and love and benevolence and ministry to those around us. Going back a little bit into the Old Testament, thinking about rest, every 7 years was a sabbatical year. Every 7 years was a year of rest. And that principle of a week now is put into the context of years. And so every 7 years was a year of rest. They were to let the fields rest. Every 49 years, the next year was a year of Jubilee, which was another fulfillment on top of that yet. It gives you, if you study that, it gives you the understanding that this was important to God. And what is important to God may have shifted in the New Testament, but there's still some principles there that did not change. taking this a step further, our Sunday rest is a type of spiritual rest. So I'd like to turn to two verses here, or two passages. The first is Deuteronomy 5, verse 15. Thinking about this spiritual rest, Deuteronomy 5:15 says, this is Deuteronomy's account. We read Exodus 20's account of the Ten Commandments. This is Deuteronomy's account. Verse 14 is very similar to what we read in Exodus, but verse 15 says, "And remember," talking with about the Sabbath day, "that you should not rest, you should not work. And remember that thou wast a servant in the land of Egypt, and that the Lord thy God brought thee thence through a mighty hand and a stretched out arm. Therefore, the Lord thy God commanded thee to keep the Sabbath day." Now, we know that the deliverance from Egypt was a physical thing that happened to the Israelites. In the New Testament, the deliverance from Egypt is a deliverance from the world. As we, as brothers and sisters this morning, as we find deliverance from the world, it brings a rest, a spiritual rest, that I think is referred to here, that's in Deuteronomy 15. Now, if you turn to Hebrews chapter 4, we see a whole chapter here relating to rest. And I believe there's maybe two fulfillments that I believe some of the rest in Hebrews 4 is relating to a heavenly rest in our Savior's presence. I think also of it is a spiritual rest that we have now because of deliverance from sin through Jesus Christ. Hebrews 4, verse 1, "Let us therefore fear lest a promise being left of us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it." Verse 4, "For he spake in a certain place of the seventh day on this wise, and God did rest the seventh day from all his works." We should read all these verses. Let's continue reading. "And in this place again, if they shall enter into my rest, seeing therefore it remaineth that some must enter therein, and they to whom it was first preached entered not in because of unbelief. Again, he limited a certain day, saying in David, today after so long a time, as it is written, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts." Now, that's true today. It's true in the Old Testament. It's true today. If you hear the voice of God, do not harden your hearts. "For if Jesus had given them rest, then he would have not have afterwards spoken of another day. There remaineth therefore a rest to the people of God." And like I said, that rest so is something that is spiritual and is something that is a physical rest, physical spiritual rest in the presence of God. Verse 11, "Let us therefore labor to enter into that rest, lest any man fall after the same example of unbelief." So our Sunday rest, I believe in a way, looks forward, points forward to the spiritual rest that Christians have, and also an eternal rest in the future. Number three, as far as your points, that's the next point in the message. It is, what does the Lord say? It is a day of worship. Now, the last three of these points can be true of any day of the week, and I want to be clear on that. I do not mean to stand up here this morning and say that Sunday is the only day of worship. It should not be. Every day for the Christian is a day of worship. However, it does seem like there is, like, the biblical example, the example in church history, the example of our forefathers, as long as we know that there was a day set apart where we focus on worship. I already mentioned Acts 20. I don't know, for the sake of time, I'm not sure if I'm going to read that. But Acts 20 is the account of the young man that was listening to Paul preaching. I do need to turn. I'm not going to read all the verses I was going to read, but he was listening to Paul preach. He fell out, and Paul rose him, took him up as as alive. He was taken up as dead, and Paul fell on him and embraced him, and trouble not yourself, for his life is in him. And he brought out the young man alive. But in verse 7, it says, upon the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul preached unto them, ready to depart on the morrow, and continued his speech until midnight. It seems like that is an example of a day of worship on the first day of the week. And it is only fitting that there is every 7 days a day where we set aside to specifically remember, to publicly and collectively gather to worship. That is important, and I'm so thankful for that. I'm trying to imagine a life where it wouldn't be that case, and I guess we could just every couple days decide on a day to gather and worship. But I like what we have, and it's not specifically commanded in the New Testament where the church is to gather every seventh day or on the first day and have a service and have to meet to mutually encourage a brotherhood. There are no verses like that. They just simply are not there. This is an example where I believe this was. They came together to break bread, to fellowship. Whether the breaking of bread was literal or symbolic or whatever that was. Was it to break the bread of life that we say sometimes to discussing the Bible passages, or was it actual a type of communion? I'm not sure what was happening there, but it was on the first day of the week that they gathered to do that. Worship means to honor or show reverence for as a divine being or supernatural power, to regard with respect, honor, and devotion. Is that what we're doing here this morning? Are we worshiping? And only you can answer that. I can't answer that for you. This leads me right into the next point. It is a holy day. Again, every day needs to be a holy day. There's never an unholy day that is suitable for the Christian. But because we worship a holy God, we set aside a day to be holy, to present ourselves holy. You can imagine the Old Testament saints as they walked to Jerusalem, where they were going to meet God, and God was behind that curtain. The presence of God was behind that curtain. That curtain was put there so man could not see God, because God was so holy that if man somehow would catch a glimpse, he would die. Now we're glad for the New Testament, where it says we can come boldly to the throne of grace. But we still worship, but God is holy. He was holy in the Old Testament. He is holy in the New Testament. Isaiah 6, Isaiah encountered God, and it prompted him to say, woe is me, for I am undone. It is fitting that we gather on a special day of the week to meet in the presence of a holy God. It is not just a holiday or just a vacation day. Our worship on Sunday needs to set the tone for the rest of the week. And again, every day must be a holy day for the Christian. There is never a time when it is okay to be unholy or careless. But I believe we have watered down Sunday and relegated it to being almost an ordinary day, except we get up and go to church in the morning. But the rest of the day is almost ordinary. Almost. It isn't. None of you go to your job unless you have a nursing job, unless you have a dairy farm, a farm where animals do need fed. People get sick and they do need help. We understand that. But is Sunday just almost a regular day, except for Sunday morning and maybe Sunday evening? Because we fill up the rest of the day with whatever we need to catch up on or feel like doing. And I think I can feel myself easing into that. I think I can. Number 5. It is the Lord's day. It is his day. It is a day that is devoted to him. Again, every day needs to be devoted to him. But it's a special day. He created it for all people in every dispensation. It was given for our benefit. That's what we were made for. The Sabbath was made for us. It was given for our benefit. It is the Lord's day. He is Lord over it. Luke 6:5, and he said unto them that the Son of Man is the Lord also of the Sabbath. And I don't know why Revelation 1 verse 10 says that, talks about the verse I mentioned at the beginning where he was in the Spirit on the Lord's day. What did John have in mind? Why did he say the Lord's day? And there could be varying answers to that, but I believe it was because it was the day, like I think I already mentioned this, but just in case I didn't, but it was the day that our Lord rose again. He was resurrected. That was his day. That was his day of glory, of breaking the bands of death. The crucifixion did not end it all. The cross did not end it all. No, the cross only set in motion the glorification. And that's what John was saying. On the Lord's day, on the resurrection day, that is the Lord's day. What does God expect from his people on his day? And this is, I just have a couple practical things. And I asked the question, how much of my Sunday revolves around me? Does it involve getting caught up on the news? Does it involve shopping without buying on your phone? Or maybe buying, don't know, hopefully not. What about sports? Should we go hunting? Should we go fishing? Should we be running four-wheelers and snowmobiles for fun? I believe adrenaline rushes on Sunday should come because of worship, not because of a 12-point buck or a 16-inch bass. What about buying unnecessary items on Sunday? Buying gas or food only if absolutely necessary. And I feel we should, and I've done both. Buying gas, some of it was because I just wasn't as careful as I should have been Saturday night. And another because of travel and just simply need. There's no way a gas tank can do that, can hold that much. And flying home from a distant destination and arriving at an airport Sunday morning and needing to buy food. I believe there are times for that. But I believe we should feel, and I've felt, every time I do it, there's a twinge of guilt. And I think that's a good thing. There's times when it's necessary, but I don't feel it. I don't think we should feel comfortable with it. Or how much of Sunday revolves around me? Still answering this question. Do we need a couple hours of nap because we ran ourselves ragged through the week? It's a day of rest, but it's a day of soul rest, not just because you've run yourself to nothing, that you need to catch up on hours of sleep. See, does this all fit with the day set apart for worship of God, a holy day? Does it entertain, answer this question, ask yourself this question, does it entertain myself or do I use it to bless others? Visiting. Extra long devotional times. Sunday school lessons studied before church. Worshiping God through nature walks, hikes or picnics. Those are things that we do ourselves. But a lot of Sunday should be involved around ministering. Quiet games with families, socializing with the people of God, singing and praising God, I think are ways, and ministering to visiting people who maybe can't get out as much. Is our Sunday activity something that feeds me and my ego, or what feels good to me, or what I just love to do that's just for me, or is it something that blesses those around, blesses my family? A picnic is an excellent way, a picnic with a family. Okay, we're going to bring this to a close. Turn in closing, though, to Isaiah 58. I stumbled across these verses late last evening when I was studying. Isaiah 58 is an interesting chapter. I want to go to verse 13 and 14. I want to close after reading these verses. And then Brother Clarence will lead us in prayer. Verse 13. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure, in other words, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, this is God speaking, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the Lord, honorable, and shalt honor him, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words, then shalt thou delight thyself in the Lord, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage of Jacob thy father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. I know that's Old Testament. I know I was reminded of this when Brother Chad was talking about opening up the storehouses of heaven and pouring out a blessing. And I support him in that. I believe we can relate to that to us as well as we give. I believe there's blessings that come back. And sometimes it seems like we do right things and we don't see the rewards. But I take these verses as rewards for us. If we turn our view of the Lord's day from a selfishness to honoring the Lord, the holiness of God, doing honorable things and honoring him, not feeding ourselves, there will be a blessing to us. Let's kneel for prayer.